welcome for the very first edition of the Style Guides podcast. My name is Brad Frost.
I'm Anna Debenham.
And today we are pleased to have Gina Bolton with us. Gina, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. So I think we're going to just really jump right into it. So Gina, you've been working with a load of brands, a load of different, you have a wealth of experience about sort of creating these style guides. Could you give us just sort of an overall sort of background on, you know, sort of where you're at, what you're working on, and sort of what your trajectory has been?
Sure. Just in terms of style guides, you mean?
Yeah. I guess, I guess where are you working now?
Okay, I'm currently working at Salesforce on the product UX team. And, you know, one of our big projects is the style guide, so pretty excited. So to give a little bit of background, I started with the typical brand guidelines when I was working in an agency, and those were done with PDFs. And I guess, like, over the years, kind of started moving more towards online, and then at some point realizing that it's even better doing it living in the application itself versus, you know, having a I remember when I was at Apple, I actually had it running on a WordPress install. That didn't work out so well, but yeah, just lately I've been focused on designing systems and working with UI libraries and style guides, and especially for the team I'm on right now, it's a really large design team, and we have a lot of different products and different features, and you know, lots of different things to think about. And so, for what we're doing, it's extremely crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back away, so you've been working with style guides now for what, you know, 5-6 years?
I want to say around 2004 or so about 10.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. That's fantastic. And it started off with, like, sort of the more sort of traditional brand style guides. So do you want to actually talk about sort of the differences? Because you've written about this, which I think is phenomenal, sort of the differences between the different sort of types of style guides, right? So you were saying that whenever you started off in the agency world, sort of working with these brand style guides, but it's sort of, you know, where in your mind is that sort of differentiation between sort of what's a brand style guide versus what's a code style guide versus a front end style guide? You know, is there a difference to you, or how do you sort of talk about that?
Yeah, for sure. Starting out, it was brand. We actually did also have a section for documenting the CSS, but that was in PDF format. Like, we'd go line by line in CSS and explain what we were doing, but mainly it was more about here's the color palettes, here's the typography, and here are the different grid options, like for top level pages, secondary pages, and so on.
And was that based off kind of print brand guidelines?
Yeah, exactly. And so I guess, like, I think the term style guide, as far as I'm aware, was mostly originating from writing style guides, and it sort of got adopted by agencies for brands as well. And now, like, everyone's working on applications, and so it's sort of become like this umbrella term for general documentation. But I definitely feel like there are differences, like, between, like, component or UI libraries versus, like, code documentation versus, you know, branding guidelines. And some people try to blend it all into, like, one Uber doc, or some people keep them separate. And so actually what we're working on right now is sort of separating these different things and then maybe giving it a shared navigation, but, like, allowing each thing to be very focused. And I'm pretty excited about the direction we're heading in.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit more about that? So I guess So you're at Salesforce and you guys have a style guide currently, right? And so you're talking about sort of the next generation. What are your plans for that? Is to sort of split it up a little bit, or?
Yeah, so the style guide is actually, when I saw it, I thought it was beautiful, and it's why I wanted to join this team. And it does a lot of, you know, great stuff. It's got our colors, it's got swatches, shows our icon fonts and our SVG fonts. Shows our components, and it kind of compiles them into little examples. You can sort of see all the components, how they work together for different screens. And it does a lot of things. But since that was built, we've improved a lot of our thinking around our system and our tools. One of them we wrote about fairly recently on Medium, our living design system is what we're calling it. And it's basically because we have to actually also think about Android, iPhone, Windows, and all these different platforms, and we need to build a design system that's agnostic to all those different ways that design can be consumed. So we created this tool called Theo, which basically is we keep all our design properties in one file, like colors, fonts, all that stuff, and then we actually generate SAS, LESS, Stylus, JSON, XML, all the different formats needed for all these different platforms that we're on. And so every time we update, like maybe we have an accessibility change we need to make, like a color isn't contrasted enough, we make that change in one space or one spot, and it propagates to all those different platforms. So
wow, that is ambitious. That is
yeah, but it's working really well for us, and it's awesome because it means the developers, we don't need to track down every single developer to make a color change. Like, we can just make it on our end, and then when they do a pull or a build, they just bring that in.
Is Theo something that other people can use, or is it just...
Yeah, we've open sourced it. We have a GitHub repo, and some people have already started exploring with it and even contributing to the code base, which is awesome.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing a lot more writing and articles on that because we're pretty excited about it, especially for our space. You know, we're in the enterprise space, so we kind of have to build a system like this.
Yeah, that's great. I think that sort of building on that, as far as you guys are concerned, and this is something I hear come up a lot, and especially with your experience, you know, how far down the style guide rabbit hole do you go, and like how do you enforce it? Are you ruling with an iron fist? And it sort of seems like you guys are all in on this sort of unified language, and there's really not a lot of deviation. And that's sort of something I hear from quite a few people. Actually, they say, well, you know, we're sort of scared. We don't want to be handcuffed by this sort of, you know, by this language. And, you know, we still want to be able to do our own thing. Or, you know, in your experience, you know, have you found that sort of thinking to be justified, or is it something somewhere in between? I don't know.
Yeah. So first, to answer the first part, how we get people on board with this, you know, some designers still work within like redline specs. Mm. Some work in the browser. When it comes to delivering a design, we have a workplace where we tell our designers and our developers to not think in hard-coded values, but to think in the named values, which you could think of them as like SAS variables. We've also used the word tokens. Right now we're calling them, like the actual system that we're building is like our design properties. So instead of, you know, a hex of 444 for text, you wouldn't spec that. You would spec the name color text. And then if we ever change that text color, their specs are still going to be up to date.
Right.
And so we always, you know, make sure anything that we're delivering is using the names versus the actual output value.
Very and interesting. So everything is a variable, in other words.
Yeah, everything that needs to, you know, be reusable. Sure, and sure. It's not just about, like, reusability, but it's also, you know, if we decide we want to change the background color, that also affects, like, you know, now we're going to also make sure the text color that's on that background color still is accessible. And so it just kind of helps keep everything more centralized. Mm-hmm. And we can, we don't have as many bugs to fix if we are all on board on this system. It's definitely been a new process for a lot of our new designers and even some designers that have been here for a while. So it's definitely an ongoing iterative process, but I feel like it's getting better and better with each release, which has me really excited. And it's also awesome to see, I kind of check out what's going on and any issues or bugs that come up. And if something's hard coded, you can just be like, well, don't use a hard coded value and then you'll be fine. So, and then in terms of being able to still feel like it's your design and exploring, we definitely don't want to be dictators in this. Mm. Nobody wants to have a design, totally dictated and you're just kind of pushing things around or whatever. So right. We still encourage exploration and prototyping and wireframing, and we still do a lot of that. It's just when it comes to final delivery, then we just need to make sure, do we need to create new values or design properties, or do we need to adjust one that we already have? We're part of that process towards the end to make sure we're still using a system.
Right.
So do you have one person in charge, or is it kind of everyone's responsibility to keep it up to date?
It's sort of a team. So I'm on a team that, and it's, I don't want to say in charge, it's more of a collaboration. Mm-hmm. We definitely want to work with other designers. So it's still their design, but it's not sort of this dictator thing. It's more of a collaborative effort.
Yeah.
But so you guys, your team isn't working. So you guys are sort of overseeing the overall sort of system, but sort of working with each individual team to sort of make sure that all that thinking and stuff makes it into the final language?
Yep.
Okay. Oh, that's awesome. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
at other places you've worked and people you've worked with, has that been the case? Do you see that as sort of an organizational necessity in order to sort of have this sort of the night's watch of this style guy?
I like putting it that way. That's nice. Now, I've worked at a lot of smaller companies, and when you're on a much smaller design team, I fully recognize it's hard to have people that are just full-time dedicated on this. So, when I was at Do.com, which was the previous startup that was owned by Salesforce that I was at before I moved over to this team, we only had three designers, and so it was really just sort of something I would try to just take the time to do. So anytime any code was going to go live, it's we always made sure I would look over the pull requests and, try to make sure it's still following the system. It's kind of a lot of work for one person to do. So it's awesome if you can get a team to do it. I think it's worth investing in a team to do this, especially if you're working on either something large scale or maybe even if you have various projects. I actually, when I was in Memphis recently for CreativeWorks, I stopped by this design agency, Archer Malmo, and talked with their designers and developers about it. They were looking at trying to build some system for all their various clients. Maybe each client's website is different. Mm-hmm. They still wanted to sort of use some of the same patterns and systems. And so I think it could be applied to a lot of different things.
Is it something you've had to sell to companies, or is it just something that you've kind of done in the background?
So in the past, I would try to sell it, to my manager, or my team. And sometimes, people look at it as sort of busy work and sort of deprioritize it. And I especially think it's a problem if you're trying to do it all in one go, maybe at the end of the release versus iteratively, during working mm-hmm. towards a release. When I was at EngineYard, though, I had the opportunity to work on this as my first project with them. And that was the first time I wrote about living style guides. And it was the first time I had tried it. It was my first project just to kind of get to know the app was to refactor the code base and create a living style guide. And so I didn't have to sell anyone on that. So that was awesome.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah.
But I think the key thing that I always try to harp on is, it's definitely important, but just never like wait till the end. Like just do it as part of your process, and it'll make things way more manageable and it'll make it more realistic.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's been my experience as well, is sort of putting it off into the end or treating it sort of as a separate thing is just asking for it to just sort of die on the vine or just sort of become, you know, sort of outdated and obsolete. So
I've been using the term zombie style guide. Yeah,
that's awesome. So you're really involved in a lot of sort of the SaaS development and stuff like that, and sort of naming, and you sound like you have some sort of interesting things going on as far as sort of how you're creating a maintainable code base so that all of your sort of SaaS stuff and you know is up to date, sort of in both the production environment and as well as the style guide. Do you want to talk a little bit about sort of code specific style guides and sort of what values are you looking for? What, you know, what have you found useful? What have developers that you've been working with what do they find useful?
So yeah, I worked on the SaaS website, and it was the first time working on a website that I knew I was going to be open sourcing, which is a really, from my personal experience, was a very new experience for me, and I learned a lot from it. But yeah, I was concerned with maintainability over time, like if people are contributing to the site design and code base, which I totally encourage people to do. I was worried about the style guide getting out of sync, and I didn't want that to happen. Some of the things I did on the SaaS website ended up being pretty similar to what we ended up doing for the design system I was talking about that we're doing at Salesforce. But the SaaS website's built on Middleman, the technology I used to do this was Middleman allows you to have a folder for JSON or YAML files, and then you can use that data within the rest of your site. And so what I had done is I had a YAML file with all my colors and, you know, type sizes and things like that. And so the markup and the style guide would generate off of that. And then if you're working within a Ruby code base, you can actually change the extension of your SAS file. So you can actually inject Ruby in your SAS file, which is totally not like a totally kosher thing to do, but it works. And so what I was doing was I was generating the CSS variables and class names for each swatch off of that same file. And so anytime a new color is added, provided, you know, the person contributing does it there, the new swatch will just automatically, like, show up in the style guide.
Yeah.
That's so pretty clever. Cool.
Yeah.
That's... Yeah, I thought it was pretty neat. But now you have, like, SAS maps and all this stuff that's out now, so I kind of want to go back and see if I can refactor it to be a little cleaner. But it's working for now.
That's awesome. Yeah, and that I think that that's sort of little things like that, you know, just go a long way to making sure that the style guide is as up to date as possible, and that all the nooks and crannies and stuff are taken care of, because in my experience, it's easy to, okay, here are the brand colors, here are the interface colors we're using, but then we'll deviate from those, and there'll be one or two that just aren't accounted for. So that's a really clever technique. That's really
cool.
Thank
you.
Yeah.
Do you have any tips on variable names for things like colors? Because you mentioned about the colors changing, and I fell into the trap of using the color name as a variable, and
So I've seen a lot of debate on whether colors should be named by their color or named for what they're used for. And I prefer to do both. And so for clarity, I have all my colors named so I know what they are, because I don't have every hex value memorized. Maybe you do. I don't.
Amateur.
So I have them all named so I know what the colors are, but then I have names that are semantically named, like maybe it's color text or color text link, and then color background input or like whatever. And I always use broad to specific, because then when you have them all stacked up, yep. you can kind of easily scan them. And so, and then you might even have like a color name used in more than one place, and that's okay. So I might have two color text variables that point to the same color variable, but I think that's okay, because then it means like maybe if you need to change one but not the other, you don't have to do like this crazy refactor. You can just change it in one spot.
Yeah.
So like if maybe I have a file for like all my header styles. I might have things that are specific to the header, but they would just like point back to the global styles.
Yeah, that's really clever. Yeah, I think that sort of multi-tiered level of variables does come in handy. So then, yeah, you're able to sort of be literal, but then also sort of apply it to a context and sort of, you know, ebb and flow depending on where you need it. That's really
yeah.
cool.
And of course, like for really, really simple sites, that might be like too much abstraction, but for really complex sites, I think it's super handy.
Mm. Yeah. So speaking of really complex sites and sort of coming back to, I think, to the organizational challenges and opportunities, we sort of jumped right in here, but, you know, and which is awesome. And that's obviously, you know, what we're here to do. But just sort of, you know, taking a step back, In your you know really long time dealing with these style guides and stuff, like what have you seen to be the biggest benefits for an organization, and also sort of some of the challenges sort of that this type of thinking, this type of technique really sort of brings to the organization?
For our particular use case, there's a ton of benefits. Obviously, the documentation piece is nice because, you know, if we have new designers joining a team, which happens very frequently, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to get up to speed. But I think the biggest benefit out of all is the fact that we're not just documenting. Like, we are building a tool and a system, and it's been making our design changes happen a lot faster, which is really amazing for us. And I feel like the overall quality is getting better and better. So I guess like for me, I'm even less interested in the guide aspect of the style guide right now. Like I'm interested in the system.
Yeah.
So that to me, that's the hugest benefit of all.
I guess it's seeing it less as documentation and more as a tool.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's where that real that word living, right? In your
right.
What you talk about living style guides versus here's a style guide is like that's nice. I might throw this in the trash can. but a living yeah. style guide is more a tool, is more useful. So that's awesome. So and as far as the organization, so naturally, of course, designers and developers are sort of on board with this. They're the ones actually sort of making use of it. How is the rest of the organization sort of reacting to it? Like how, you know, business owners or product owners, or I don't know exactly what your organization calls them, but the suits and the managers and the sort of higher ups, like, do they understand and appreciate this? And do you have to sort of talk to them and sort of have, you know, conversations or convince them of anything or?
So I'm not often in conversations with the quote unquote suits right now, but I can definitely see that they value it, especially when you just see the product getting better and better and better. Of course, you know, they care about that.
Yeah.
And it's also really like an added bonus. It's really cool for recruiting because when we're putting this stuff out there, people see that.
Yeah, like
yeah, exactly. They got me because of it. So, you know, they definitely see value in it. The two, like any specifics, I don't really have an answer for that.
Sure. But I guess, again, and sort of very often the sort of non-designer, non-technical people, in my experience, are often the ones that are saying, well, but we're different. We need to be purple. Right. Whereas the rest of the site is, or the application is totally not purple, but you sort of have somebody that's not a designer, a developer sort of weighing in and saying, no, I'm a special snowflake. Give me my own, you know, sort of unique sort of execution. Have you ever sort of come across that, or am I alone in that?
Not in this particular job, but I've definitely have had things like that happen in past gigs.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that's great to hear, though, that sort of the organization is on board with it. So sort of coming back to this whole Theo thing, I'm really curious about, do you have, so you sort of have iOS, you have Android, you have your web property, you have sort of all this stuff in sync, right? All sort of sharing the same design language. Do you ever run into instances wherever, you know, iOS and Android have sort of conflicting patterns, or, you know, the web and iOS and I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Part of the generation of these files that Theo does is, like for Android, transparencies are going to use like an 8-digit hex. Mm. But like for the web, you probably use RGBA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, other things like values, like maybe for Android, you're using DP or SP, and maybe points for iOS or whatever it is that uses. And then maybe you're using REM for the web. It does that conversion as well.
Wow.
And then because it's part of the build process, like when we make a change, it's not going to immediately like change on the engineering teams and until they pull it in and build their app. So it's not like they're going to be working and all of a sudden something switches from red to green and right. They'd be like, what just happened? Right. It would be like part of, Yeah, when they're ready to pull it in, then they would bring it in.
Okay. So this is more for sort of global styles that are shared, things like color and typography and stuff, but I guess sort of more on like a component by component level, maybe those things aren't shared as much. Is that what I'm getting?
Currently, yeah. Like, so the Android team is going to build a component very differently from the way, you know, a web team would. So this Theo system is really just a glossary of design values.
That's awesome.
Or design properties. Yeah. And then we're building other tools for the web. Like right now I'm working as well on a CSS/UI framework thing. But obviously that wouldn't really be used on the native teams. So we're kind of building like multiple sets of tools and some will consume others. But yeah, I feel good about separating all these things into like little packageable tools.
Yeah. So I get that actually leads quite nicely into sort of, I guess what will be our last question is sort of what is your end goal, right? What is that ideal setup for you? What is in your opinion the perfect style guide, the perfect sort of workflow and organizational setup?
World domination. No, yeah, so I guess it's like kind of the direction we're heading right now is especially for what we need, I would think would be the end goal is having the glossary of all the different design values that can be consumed by whatever platform or, you know, whether you're native or web. And then having like design principles outlined for like color, typography and all that stuff. That's sort of like more of a traditional style guide. And then having like a component library, which can be used, for really anything that you're trying to do on our platform. And these could be like totally separate code bases, but sharing the same navigation. Sort of like, I really like how the Android design guidelines share the same navigation as the developer guidelines, but they're like very different entities. So that's kind of the direction that we're going in right now.
That is awesome. I think that's a great thing to shoot for, and that's really awesome that not only do you have a style guide already, that you are working on this sort of next generation. So really excited to see where that ends up, and also again, sort of kudos to you guys. Back to it being a recruitment tool. I mean, I think that it's just a great tool to see out in the wild. For me to be able to dive into Salesforce's style guide, and like I've I've combed through it many times, just sort of going, what are they calling this thing again? I think it's so cool though that you guys are really, you know, putting it all out there, putting it out in the open and iterating on it and writing about it. And I just want to say thank you for that.
Awesome. But we'll keep doing what we're doing.
The little toggle thing as well, the brightness toggle. That's really cool.
Okay. Well, hey, Gina, thank you so much for coming on this. Thank you for being our first guest. I hope that it wasn't too crazy for you. So, but yeah, thank you. Really appreciate you taking the time. And yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. This is awesome. I'm excited for more episodes.